Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create your dream business so you can live the dream lifestyle that you want and deserve. Yes, success is not only possible, you deserve success. And now, welcome the dream business coach, Jim Palmer.
Hello there, everybody. Welcome to another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio. This is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Those are great things in anybody's business. I'm your host, Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. I'm really excited about this week's show. My special guest is the President and Chief Technology Officer of Two River Technology Group. His name is Frank DiBenedetto. Let me briefly introduce Frank, and we'll bring him right on. Frank has spent the past two decades passionately helping business owners navigate the complex world of technology. He's the President and Chief Technology Advisor of Two River Technology Group, a technology solutions provider located in Shrewsbury, New Jersey. He is also the mastermind behind the Audit Sales Presentation System. It's a sales tool designed to elevate the quality of IT solutions delivered to small and mid-sized businesses and to help MSPs sell higher value IT solutions. His genuine interest is in helping businesses. He's a real entrepreneur at heart, and his no-nonsense approach to explaining challenging technology concepts in plain English has helped him grow his business into one of the premier cloud service providers in the state. Frank, how you doing today? Thanks for being my special guest.
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me on.
So we share the same climate. I'm in the Philadelphia, Chester County area, so we have the same beautiful fall weather as we're doing this recording. So that you're pretty close to the shore, right?
Yeah, we are right at the start of what you would consider the Jersey Shore. So we were like ground zero for Hurricane Sandy several years ago. So that's kind
of that right?
Geographic.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a landmark.
So did you have a lot of damage?
You know, the snow that came the day after did more damage for me than the rain and the hurricane the day before. It was kind of weird, but there was a lot of damage in the surrounding areas. We were luckily spared, but yeah, the area was pretty hard hit.
Well, good for you. So, you know, I think I read in your intro what two decades or something like that. Your picture looks like you're about 26 years old. Maybe it's an old picture, or like me, you just got a young howdy-doody face. So I don't know.
Yeah,
clean living.
I've been blessed with a younger looking face, I guess. It works well. But yeah, that's a pretty recent picture. So I promise.
Especially in the technology world, I mean, that's really thought to be a young space, a place where you got to be cutting edge, and things change so quickly. So give me briefly when you got into the IT space, and then when you put together the fact that being smart in IT and knowing all the big words and how stuff works is probably not the best way to sell that service.
Yeah, so, you know, I went to Rutgers University, and I got a degree in engineering, and sadly, from my parents who spent all that money, I just figured out that I didn't want to be an engineer after 4 years. So I actually entered into the financial services world and spent a couple of years working there. And for some reason, I had just sort of had a penchant for technology, and I kind of gravitated towards that. And that was in the 90s. There wasn't a whole lot going on at the time. So I taught myself some programming, and one of the home offices in New York took notice. I did a little consulting to them, and then it kind of snowballed from there, because the agents that were selling insurance and financial services, their clients were privately held professional service organizations. And every once in a while, an agent would come to me and say, "Hey, I have a really good client, and they're looking for somebody to do some IT work. You know, are you interested?" So I built this little side business, and eventually one day I just realized that side business was viable, and I kind of jumped into the world of tech, and it kind of grew from there. Because of my background, you know, our primary vertical is financial services. Obviously, I speak the language and understand all the compliance complexities, so you know that's what our main clientele is. But we've kind of fanned out from there. So you know, professional service organizations, and you know, when you talked about sort of my passion, one thing that's always bothered me is every time I go in to a prospect, I look at their environment from an IT perspective, and I'm always disappointed. And, you know, I kind of take it personally because that's my industry. And I think sometimes, you know, what's going on with my peers? I mean, I know they're really smart. I know a lot of people out there. I just wonder why I don't see better stuff in the hands of these prospects. And I started to realize that I think one of the issues is a lot of people don't know how to sell. So they sell only what the prospect will buy and not what they need. So I kind of set out for a different way to try to figure out how to sell more easily, and that's sort of what led me over to the audit sales presentation system.
You know, when I was 15, I got my first job in retail like so many people. I spent about 25 years in retail, and one of the things I learned later as a trainer, regional manager, et cetera, was that people were they're selling – trying to impress the customer on their knowledge of the product, right? So if you're selling stereo equipment, oh, this has, you know, the XYZ and so many ohms, and it's got, you know, the this, that, and the other thing, and people's eyes glaze over. And they also, and my point is, I'm sure this is exactly the same in financial and insurance, is you're using so much knowledge that goes over the customer's head. What I realized at a pretty early age, Frank, was that the people won't come back and say, I don't understand that, because they don't want to look dumb in front of a salesman, right? So
right.
What I used to do is I had a good understanding of, you know, I was selling bicycles for a while, of what we did in that industry, but instead of talking about the you know, the chromoly frame or the how the gear shifters were made up, I would talk about, yeah, and with this bike, you can climb a hill effortlessly without getting off and pushing it up the hill. And that's all I sold, right? Or, you know,
yeah.
the seat, I used to talk about these different seats, and if you put this gel saddle on, you can actually ride for 10 miles instead of 10 minutes without having a sore butt. And all the other guys are talking about, well, it's got this gel fabric and blah, 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 blah. And I think that, or you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're selling insurance and IT services and things like that, it's not like your incredible knowledge of how the whole system is set up and what it works. You really need to address what's going on in the customer's head at their level. Am I right?
Absolutely. I heard somebody say one day that, especially in the world of IT, that we're cursed with the gift of knowledge. And we know so much about the bits and the bytes that it's just natural tendency for us to try to speak that way to a prospect. And you're right. You know, they'll smile and they'll nod their head, and they really they have no idea what we're talking about. So I'm also smiling here because you said chrome moly, and I remember being a kid and spending almost every extra dollar I had on a mongoose, and every part had to be chrome moly, and
yes,
and all that stuff.
There you
so,
go.
That
mongoose.
Those were fun days. But yeah, I think you know, selling more based on emotion and listening to what the client's needs are, the prospect's needs are, is important, because otherwise you wind up being a solution, just kind of looking for the problem so you can kind of, you know, retrofit it into there. So,
by the way, I'm gonna give you a little thing here. So I'm a business coach, and I'm always hearing things. I just heard something which would be a phenomenal book for you, or you and Ralph, to your partner, to write. I would call it "Cursed with the Gift of Knowledge," or something like that. And why? And the subtitle would be "Why IT Salesmen Can't Sell Their Way Out of a Wet Box," or something like that. Something a little bit of in your face. I mean, that's really, anyway. That's a little coaching for today, but I really like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I like it. Very catchy,
so,
for sure.
So tell me about your business started evolving, and obviously you're a smart IT guy, but you also recognize from an entrepreneurial perspective what it takes to grow a successful IT business. So where did the sales part start coming in? Did people just reach out and goes, well, you obviously done well. How are you doing that? Is that how that started?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I listened to your last podcast, and if you got an attorney on, he talked about you look to your left, you look to your right, and just do what everybody else does, right? Because you don't want to be the one guy, you know, standing out there on your own. So, you know, I kind of did that in the beginning, but the one twist was I didn't want to do what they call break fix. Break fix is where, you know, you go into a client's office, you fix whatever's broken, and you leave, and then you don't hear from them until something else is broken. I just didn't like the concept. Number one, I didn't want to only interact with the client when they're mad and stressed and upset. And two, if you're really good at what you do, there's probably not going to be a lot of problems, which means I'm not going to make any money. So that I wanted to take a more proactive approach. So I set these monitoring plans up, and initially I did it because I had a full-time job, and I said, well, I need a way to monitor this stuff and be proactive so I don't get a lot of calls, but I still want to get some money from them. So I set up these monitoring plans, and it wasn't until a few years later that I started to research the industry that it was called managed services. It was actually a whole segment out there. I thought I invented it, but apparently I didn't. So it kind of grew from there. And then, you know, I've always read a lot of books, and one thing that I decided long ago was that I wanted to surround myself with people who were smarter than me. I don't like to be the center of attention and, you know, be the talker. I want to learn from people. So anytime I get into any kind of peer groups, I surround myself who are either smarter or making more money than me, and I try to learn from them. So a lot of the salesmanship has really been just being a student of all the material that's out there, and, you know, attending different peer groups. And, you know, every once in a while, suddenly after a year or maybe more, you become like the smartest guy in the group, and then I sort of fade away and I find another group where I can continue to learn. So that's really been the key secret to some of my success on the sales side.
So let's kind of go back to the IT thing. So why shouldn't someone try and sell IT solutions based on the, you know, what you would consider data and logic, which is kind of the wheelhouse that they live in?
Yeah. So one of the probably the most acceptable ways to try to get your foot in the door if you're an IT company is to, you know, maybe do some sort of technical assessment or analysis. You know, might offer, say, hey, I'll come in and I'll do this analysis, whether it's free or it's paid. I'll kind of tell you, you know, what you found. And again, going back to that curse of knowledge, because we're a lot of people in the IT industry are technicians at heart. What winds up happening is we come in and we want to tell you all about all the technology, and it's just overwhelming. It's really difficult to kind of reconcile and keep track of. And ultimately, you end up with a proposal in front of you. And what I found, and I did it the wrong way for a lot of years, I found that my solutions were never the cheapest. And I think we're really good at what we do, but we weren't conveying the value properly. And so I took a step back and said, how are we presenting? And I said, well, if I'm overwhelming them with technical knowledge and information that they don't understand, at the end of the day, they're only going to make a decision based on price. And if I'm not the least expensive guy that they're comparing it to, I'll probably lose that sale. So I knew that I had to change something. And I stepped back. There was a system way back in the day in the financial services world that I had used. And I said, you know, that was based more on emotion. It was like, let's boil this information down into like a summary statement. So the best analogy I can make is like, let's pretend I was a doctor instead of an IT professional. If you came to me and I was your doctor, I might do some fact finding on your health, and then I send you for some tests. But when we come back, we're not going to review 50 pages of lab work. Right? In the IT world, there's a chance that I may feel compelled to do that. But in the, you know, medical world, the likelihood is the doctor is going to say to you, hey, I reviewed the lab work. You have high cholesterol. So I started to think about that and said, you know, maybe what I need to do is stop thinking like a technician and start thinking more like a doctor and give you bottom line summary on the information that I've come up with. And then one thing I learned long ago is people react to colors. Red, green, and yellow, everybody understands that. So if I could color code some things for you and I gave you the summary of the information, you know, green's good. You're going to start focusing and say, hey, what's this red stuff over here? And that elicits an emotional response. So these things combined are kind of how I changed how we sold, more based on emotion, less based on the technical facts. The facts are there to support it. You know, we certainly have like a binder with all that, you know, all that information there, but I rarely present that now to a prospect. And that's kind of what we teach to some other of our other peers that are managed service providers out there.
I want to check in with you. One of the things that I do and one of the things that I teach my clients is something that seems very counterintuitive, but I teach people to slow down the sale. you know, I find that too many, especially I think probably the price tag of some of your services, not that you're outrageous, but you know, you're not selling $9.95 little, you know, fix-it widgets. But you know, when people sense they have a prospect or somebody raised their hand, whether it's from a website or anything, and they contact, oh good, it's a live one, let's reel them in. But what I believe is that when you're selling and looking for actually a long-term profitable relationship, it really pays to actually slow down the sale. Maybe even sell something slightly smaller than what they think they need, because in the end, you know, when I think when you help people get small successes quicker, they're more likely to get excited and say, yeah, okay, now I want more of that, or what else can you do? Do you follow any of that kind of logic in what you teach, Frank?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we typically teach a two-meeting approach and then a possible third. So the first meeting is really about fact-finding, where you're listening to the prospect and trying to gather all that information. I'm not a one-meeting close kind of guy. I know there's some people out there that can get that done. So I kind of subscribe, I think, a little bit more to your methodology. Then we come back, and the second meeting is really a presenting of the findings. And you know, there's a chance that they want to buy right then and there. In fact, I just pulled up an email from somebody we helped the other day, and he said, guys, thank you so much for your help. Frank, I followed your steps, and the meeting was amazing. We sat down at 11 a.m., and at 12:05, we were signing contracts. The step-by-step approach made the deal close itself. I can't thank you enough. So I guess that goes against what we're talking about, but typically I would say, you know, maybe like a 2-3-meeting approach, and then, you know, using a presentation that's not mired in technical details, a little bit more high level. We regularly hear from our prospects how this was very unique. They really enjoyed, and it wasn't overwhelming to them. So I like slowing it down, and I do like to not talk above them, and I think our methodology helps you do that.
How do you convince prospects that, like, the cloud, I mean, I don't know how long the cloud's been around, probably for a long time, but it seems like in the last 2 or 3 years, cloud-based solutions and backup and things like that is certainly, you know, omnipresent in every discussion. So how do people feel comfortable or uncomfortable with that? I mean, every day we turn around, you're seeing more people's emails are hacked and stuff's getting hacked, and as compared to, I guess, having some, you know, some equipment on site that's backing up, or is that a big challenge for you?
You know, in our area, no. So if we roll back, I mentioned Hurricane Sandy. So, you know, we were a managed service provider, which meant, you know, we kind of took care of all your on-prem equipment. It's kind of the way that everybody was doing things. Cloud was just starting to creep in. I'm a big hockey fan. Wayne Gretzky said what made him great was he knew where the puck was going. He didn't go where it had been. And so I always tried to have that vision in business, like where's the puck going? And I knew it was going to cloud. So early on, we partnered with a really great cloud company called OS33. And we started out about 4 years ago pitching this. And we had a couple people move. A few people were skeptical. And then an interesting thing happened. So Hurricane Sandy happens, and there's no power, and in most cases, no internet. And after a day or two, people really started to freak out. And it was something that I realized was a huge hole in our offering, right? I could come in there. The servers were backed up. They were dry. They were safe. There was nothing wrong. No data loss. We just had no electricity. And I had more than a few clients like saying, hey, we pay you a lot of money every month. I have to run payroll. I have to get to my stuff. You know, my business is really in jeopardy here. And I said, I understand, but you need electricity. So cloud became – it really what it came down to was business continuity, and that's what cloud offers you. So we were playing with a little bit of a loaded deck for a while. We had people that were like, put us on the cloud, you know, yesterday. So we put a bunch of people on. They loved it. We were big on gathering testimonials and using that to kind of fuel sales, and then we kind of marketed that way. So these days – it's not as challenging. It's been around. It's pretty well vetted. I mean, you still hear horror stories, but that's, I think, when people try to do it themselves. And it's really, you know, a reason why you should make sure that you're invested in a good IT company.
Yeah. How long were some of those people without electricity?
Oh, wow. So me personally, I was without power for 11 days. Our offices were down about 7. But the good part was we were already in the cloud. So we were working, at full capacity the next day, using cell phones, or a few of our guys just went somewhere where we could get some internet. And we were pretty, up and running pretty quickly. But, we had people down for upwards of a week. And that starts to create problems. People don't think about that. I said, let me turn all your stuff off for 2 days and see what happens. So,
yeah,
it's definitely an eye-opener on the business continuity side.
So, Frank, if things are on the cloud and a business is without electricity for 7 days, the people would need to go wherever there is electricity, spare office or something, and as soon as they get connected, they have all – that's when they can start doing business again, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. As long as you can go somewhere where you have some, have power and internet. Internet, of course, being the key part here, because just power is not going to do it. But yeah, once you're reconnected to the internet, you could pretty much run your business. I mean, that's the idea behind cloud solutions.
Very cool. What's the best way, do you think, Frank, to get prospects to think about, their overall business needs and, the long-term ROI of the solution instead of just focusing on the bottom line? Because no matter how great your proposal is, one page, five page, whatever, they're going to go boom, 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 and find the bottom. Okay, what's this going to cost? How
right.
do you keep people focused on, the ROI of saying yes to this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, our strategy now is we don't go in with a solution at all. What I want to do is I want to show a prospect what they're getting for what they're paying for today. So the best example I could use is if I went into a prospect and they said, hey, I'm currently spending $1,000 a month on my IT provider. When we're considering cloud solutions, what do you have? If I show up and my solution is, $1,800 a month, now I have $800 more a month in value that I need to convey to them. I probably, won't get that sale because it's expensive. So what I like to do is say, look, before we look at any solutions, let's take a step back and see where we are today. And a lot of times what I'll find, they're spending $1,000 a month. They might be getting half of what they truly need. So if I could show them that, I could say to them, that's like spending $2,000 a month. You're just getting half of it, right? So that's where you are. And if you do it right, using our system, they kind of understand where they're at. Now if I come in, $1,800 isn't so bad when you compare it to that $2,000 that they're sort of effectively spending. So I'm a big fan of showing them where they are today so they truly understand. And in many cases, the theme is that they think they're spending a lot less than they are and getting a lot more, and it's usually the reverse. And then at that point, I can come in with a solution. And I may not sell the whole solution, but a lot of times I get the sale because what I've done is I've driven a wedge between them and the incumbent IT company, and they realize, wow, even though we're spending $1,000 a month, we're not getting very much for that. So that's how I've kind of shifted it here. I've shifted it away from just focusing on the dollars. And then, ultimately as we go on, that return on investment starts to become realized because, we get a lot of stuff off-premise, right? So we're not buying servers. We don't have to buy computers that are as expensive. So there's a lot of savings that people don't really initially look at. I guess it's like I saw a Tesla car in front of me today, and I'm kind of fascinated by them. And it was the first time I noticed that there was no muffler on the back. And it dawned on me, there's no gas in that. And if you're buying that car, even though it's expensive, you're saving all that money on gasoline, right? And that gas, I don't add my gasoline up. I just have to fill the car up. So there's all those soft costs. And same thing with cloud. So we try to expose that once they understand where they are today. We kind of show them if they considered our solution, what they could save and what's that, ROI later on down the line.
Well, I have a boat, and trust me, I don't keep track of my boat receipts because I probably sell it. So I'm just about out of time, Frank, but I really want to try and get in one more question. I was doing some research before the interview, and you mentioned somewhere about break X mentality. Can you explain that a little bit?
Break fix mentality, yeah. So break fix in the IT world, and there's still a lot of people who subscribe to this, is they don't have an IT professional. They do it on their own. And then something breaks, and usually we get the calls. Somebody calls, their hair's on fire, And unfortunately, we don't service those prospects. We focus on our clients. So those prospects are always in jeopardy, usually because they have no IT professional coaching them along or because they did it themselves and now they're in some trouble. And I don't find them to be great prospects. You know, usually you go in, we fix things up, but they're rarely at a point then that they want to now consider, you know, managed services. They kind of just say, well, we fixed the problem, it probably won't happen again, then they go back along. And what's scary is these are a lot of the businesses that we do business with, right? It's their small businesses, and we kind of take it for granted. We think everybody's safe and secure, and they have our data. So that's the break-fix world. You know, temper that with managed services where, hey, now you have an IT company that helps you along. You're proactive. You're keeping things safe and secure. And obviously, you know, it's like taking care of your health. I mean, you can do it where you don't go to the doctor and you just show up whenever there's a problem, or you could actually watch your diet and exercise and do things properly and maybe go to the doctor once a year for a checkup. So that's the kind of two sides of the coin: break fix versus managed services, and then of course now cloud services.
Gotcha. Well, I think I could talk to you for another half an hour, so maybe in a couple of months I can get you back on the program, and we'll keep kicking this around, Frank.
Yeah, I'd love to be back. Thank you.
Well, it's been a real pleasure. I know some of our folks are going to want to connect with you, and because I said how young you look, they're going to want to see what you look like. What's a good place for them to connect with you and learn more about what you and Ralph are doing?
Yeah, so the Audit Technical Analysis System, which is perfect for any managed services providers out there, so if you're in our industry, if you go to www.audit4it.com, and that's F-O-R, not the number 4, Audit for IT, and I am available from Two River Technology Group at www.tworivertech.com, and that's 2 spelled out, T-W-O. I'm also out there in the Twitterverse and on LinkedIn if anybody would like to connect with me.
Perfect. Well, Frank, thanks a lot, man. It's been a really fun interview. Appreciate you having you on.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, folks, that wraps up this very special episode of Stick Like Glue Radio with Frank DiBenedetto. Stick Like Glue, remember, it's the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. I am Jim Palmer, your host, the Dream Business Coach. As always, I am committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Until next week, another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio. Keep taking action, keep moving forward, and don't ever, ever, ever give up. Hey, go out there and do something nice for somebody today. Take care, everybody.
For more information and free resources on how to create your dream business, connect with Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach, at www.getjimpalmer.com. And be sure to check out Dream Business Coach TV, powerful 2-minute videos filled with Jim's unique smart marketing and business building advice. See them all at www.dreambizcoach.tv. That's www.dreambizcoach.tv. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio. And remember, success is not only possible, you deserve success.